Okay, sorry about that, everybody. I know we're 5 or 6 minutes late. I had a bit of a technical issue. But wow, what a wait. We have waited 11 weeks for the interviews, and it didn't disappoint. What a show. What a show the other night, and what a show that we've got in store today. Welcome to In The Line of Hire, the show that brings you top reaction from top, top guests that have been there, done it, and dare I say, got the T-shirt as well. As you know by now, and I'm still banging on about it all this time afterwards, I was very lucky enough to be part of the apprentice journey by winning Series 4 back in 2008. And over the last 11 weeks now, we've been running a series of epic shows looking back at the class of 2022 with some very, very special guests. Each week, I have been joined by my resident expert, my business brother, my business psychologist and COO of assessment platform Phoenix 51, Chris Grimshurst, who obviously joins us here again today. How are you getting on, Chris?
Yeah, very well. Looking forward to chatting to Brittany and Stephanie today and really just talking about, yeah, some of those interviews, because that was tough.
Brutal, mate. Absolutely. Absolutely brutal. You can follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, LinkedIn, and interactive with all of the live streams. We're live right now with LinkedIn Live and obviously YouTube. You can also download us as a podcast afterwards via Audio Boom. This week, as Chris has just said, and you can see them on screen, I'm absolutely delighted. Now, I have to be honest with you, very, very excited. I'm very excited, if I can't get any more excitable, to be joined by two of this year's semi-finalists, Stephanie Affleck and Brittany Carter.
Hello!
They have been watched by 9 million people every single week on the BBC. And sometimes we do forget that we're human, and they've got businesses, they're entrepreneurs. So I'm absolutely delighted to get all the juicy gossip from them today. Stephanie, Brittany, welcome to the show. How the devil are you both?
I love your enthusiasm and excitement to have us on the show, because it's the same as we feel as well. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I've been watching this every week, and I love your analysis. I'm literally obsessed with it because I'm a stats person. So I love it. I'm really, really excited to kind of be on here. We can kind of digress everything that happened with the interviews.
It's so funny because I'll watch the show and I'll be like, wow, I wonder what I'm going to score for that when I listen to In The Line Of Hire. And that's what I'm
doing. Absolutely lovely.
I love it.
You're both getting loads of love already from the comments. So throughout, please get involved in the chat box. If you're looking at on LinkedIn or YouTube as well, Twitter, you can send us messages throughout, and I'll show them on the screen as well. Absolutely loving it. Look, favorite candidates. You're getting all the love here, Brittany, as well. Look, I love Brittany.
Well. Look at that. Yeah, Steph and I love a bit of praise, so keep it coming. We've had enough.
Absolutely. We're going to get, I've got a feeling you're going to get quite a lot today. So, look, let's get into it. I mean, having been through the process, I know how difficult it is to get to week 7, week 8, week 9. Stephanie, starting with you, if I may, what was the process like? What was it like for you?
It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, way harder than I thought it was going to be. And me and Catherine didn't have quite as good stats as Brittany and Harps did. They did what they were meant to do and then and actually won the task, and we kept losing. So it was very difficult trying to imagine myself, especially halfway through when we kept losing, trying to get myself to the interviews, because it's the same as Akshay. I think part of the reason why Akshay may have gone is just because he had really bad statistics that he kept ending up in there. And when I got to week 10 and I'd lost I'd lost 7, 8, 9, and 10. And then I created that baby food brand that was possibly the worst branding ever. I was like, do you know what, Steph? You've really got to chat yourself out of this, because I don't know how you're going to get out. I was determined I was going home week 10. Like, I was convinced of it. I packed my bags, everything. I was ready to leave. So it can be, the process is so much harder because I don't think people see the time constraints that you have and things like that. Like, they don't know, for example, the baby food branding. We only had 5 to 10 minutes to do logo, tagline, everything. It's always going to look like a GCSE art project, isn't it? It's never going to look fantastic.
I love that. It is very GCSE art.
But it always is going to be, isn't it? Like, most brands have about 5 weeks.
Time frames, haven't you? Time scales and all that sort of stuff. And some of the viewers don't realise, sometimes they look at us, and I refer to us because obviously you've been on the show, and they think, what are you doing? Like, why would you do that? And even as an ex-winner, I look at it sometimes, I think, why are you doing that, girls? But it's the time constraints and the things that you've got on in front of you, isn't it, that makes it so difficult sometimes.
And then you're not allowed to change it. So like if we created something and then we went into our first pitch and we saw that, we wouldn't even probably go to the second pitch. We would go back to the kind of draw it, go back and brainstorm it and change it to then go and pitch to further people. So it's a completely different circumstance that you're in, but it really does kind of sharpen up your pitching skills because everything's going wrong and they're asking you every question under the sun. And they're going, this is awful. And in your head, you're going, I know it is. I know this is so bad. I've still got to convince you to get some sales. Not fabulous.
Brittany, coming around to you, similar question, like how have you found the process? Because I suppose going into the process, you were slightly different to some of the other candidates in the sense of you didn't have your own business already set up or haven't been a business owner as yet. Obviously, you're starting that journey now. How did you find the process getting to week 7, 8, 9? It's bloody tiring, isn't it?
When I speak to people about the process, when I went in, I thought it was going to be 12 weeks that were horrible and competitive and a really awful experience that you were going through to win an investment. But actually, as the task went on, it was the best experience I ever had. And you actually don't want to get fired because you want to continue on the journey. Every task and every challenge, you learn so, so much. And the person I was when I came out of that process compared to the person I was when I went in, I've just tripled or quadrupled my skills and my business acumen, and it's fantastic. And I think if you look at me in the first few tasks compared to the final tasks, it demonstrates how much I learned. So by the end, you just don't want to get fired because you want to stay on that journey. But I think what the viewers at home do not necessarily see is you are physically and mentally exhausted. You're running on 3 to 4 hours sleep every single day. But when you shut your eyes, you can't just fall asleep. You're constantly thinking about what mistakes you've made or what pitch you have to do tomorrow. So it quite literally is 10 weeks of just intensity and adrenaline, but you almost go into like superhero mode because you're so concentrating on winning that it doesn't even affect you. You just keep powering on and just going through the challenges.
I love it. And obviously you girls, there was the top four girls, only the first ever semi-final to be all ladies. So you did have some power. You had the girl power, of course. But absolutely. But just looking at, you know, giving the viewers and the listeners some insight into, you don't get a day off. Like, I don't remember having a day off. I think we might have had one day off, but obviously the viewers see it over, you know, it goes out on a Thursday and they think, oh yeah, and that's the Thursday, and then it's another week and then you do another one. But you are literally back to back to back. So
Well, you film 12 episodes in 8 weeks. So that is an intense amount of time. And it's like what Brittany said, is that you don't sleep. And after, say if you've had a bad day on your first day of a task, then you're not going to sleep because you kind of already know that you've lost and you've got to go into task day two. And then you've got the boardroom. And they don't even see that the boardroom, for example, they see it for about 20 to 30 minutes. But he really does kind of cover every single thing that he can to make sure he makes the right decision. You're in there for hours. Literally, it takes a whole day to film the boardroom.
10 hours, isn't it? 10 hours. I remember,
if you lose, you're in there for 10 hours. So Brittany often only had half a day.
I can't even think what the boardroom looked like.
To be fair.
Something that's so funny that people don't consider as well is they say, how do you get ready in 20 minutes? Because when you get back in the evening, you then have to fake tan, wash your hair, set up your makeup, choose your outfit. So you get back at 11 o'clock at night and then you've got to start getting ready for tomorrow. So
Lee, did you have to fake tan and do all
your makeup? Yeah, I was going to say, my fake tanning, I'll be honest with you, it took bloody ages. It takes hours to do this part, innit?
It's a good hairstyle. But another thing people don't realise is being woken up by the cameras is the actual worst thing. That was my least favourite part of the process. I can't function without a coffee and then you've got the cameras running in at 4 a.m. talking to you and you're like, one time I led in bed like, I'm not getting up.
I remember just thinking, please don't get me in an awkward situation where they're going to see like, you know, flab or something hanging over. don't film that. No one wants to see that.
I wanted to just go into, obviously, like you referenced that some of the kind of analysis you guys were watching the show as it went along, and it was fascinating from a kind of a data point of view to see your own individual journeys, and we just wanted to just explore that a little bit with both of you as individuals. And Brittany, if we start with you, if that's okay.
Yes.
You referenced the fact that you started a little bit slow, you were kind of I think the first few shows, you didn't necessarily put yourself forward. Did you don't know, did you feel a little bit of nervousness in those first few weeks in terms of finding your feet?
Yes. So what viewers, I think, also don't consider is you have never been on television before. And suddenly you have cameras in your face, 10 or 12 production team around you, and you have seven of these amazing business women around you. And at the beginning, I definitely think I had a bit of camera anxiety. I wanted my personality to come through and I really wanted to be myself. But it was like that you're a bit in your head and it's just all a bit of a new process. And I knew in the initial tasks that I wasn't performing to my highest standard and I was not myself. I think once I'd got past task four and I'd put myself forward for project manager the first time, even though I didn't win successfully, the fact that Lord Sugar saved me clicked something in my head, because I was like, okay, he wants me here, he's seen something in me. And I think that that was really the turning point for me. And then I came in guns blazing, any of my concern was gone, and I was just like, I have to prove that he saved me for the right reason. And I gave it everything that I had. And I think that that really came across in the way that the show was broadcasted as well.
Yeah, it definitely did from our side. I think you went from really quiet to like finding your feet. And then what we did is we did that halfway analysis where we like did the accumulative scores, and you were right in the middle. And Lee and I said, right, Harps, Brittany, you've got to make a step up. And then, and you really did it. And like, you really came through, and you could see the confidence. And I think, you know, your commercial skills and your sales skills came through, and it was just lovely to see you flourishing and growing in confidence.
Thank you so much. And I'm so glad that that came across in the way that it was shown as well, because I just felt like it was a complete turning point for me. And I knew now that it was getting down to the nitty gritty of the process. And if I wanted to stay and prove myself, I had to step up. And I'm so glad that I was able to show my skills and show what I had to offer. Thank you.
Stephanie, coming around to you, just, I suppose we're reversing that question, because you were like literally, you know, bang, straight out of the traps, right? You know, and you were taking control and commanding in a way that everybody was like, wow, who's this? She's good. I mean, we were analysing you, and you were winning or in the top two virtually every week, you know, from the beginning.
And then I just went downhill.
you go downhill, but it's actually interesting. When I didn't realise until you just said it on the show that actually you lost, you know, consecutive tasks, and all of a sudden that does take a little bit of confidence. It does start to not, and you start to think, hang on a minute, I've got all these brilliant people, you know, around me, and also I'm under pressure to Lord Sugar and the production and everything's going on. How did you cope with that in the reverse way that Brittany did?
Yeah, well, I really appreciate firstly what you said about me, because when we did the first few episode airs, I was saying to Brittany Harps and Catherine, like, oh, I don't think I'm coming across like as anything at all. Like, I feel like I'm irrelevant. So I was really surprised the feedback that I was getting from people that they thought I was strong, because I knew how vocal I was before the edit. And so to me, I seemed really quiet. But yeah, what you don't realise is that I only won task 1, 2, and 6. Everything else I lost. So everything else I lost. And then obviously the last three, I lost them. And it was quite my ownership, quite epically. And it really does take quite a lot of grit to keep on going, especially when other people are. And I do think it drains your energy a little bit more when you have lost, when you're getting mixed up in the team and say, I'm going in a team with Brittany and she's just had 3 wins and I'm on, you know, 4 losses. It's really, really hard to keep going and keep your energy going and, you know, say to yourself, you still can do this, you still can do this. It does take a lot of self-belief. And I'll be honest with you, my confidence was really knocked going into those interviews. I was really, really unconfident going into them.
Really?
If I went in on task six, I would have felt like, let's do this. But I was, because I'd lost obviously 8, 9, and 10, and some of them were quite epic losses in my view. I was going in there feeling quite drained and not really, I didn't really feel like I should have been there. So I wasn't going in fully confident to the interviews. I know I looked it, but I'm quite good at faking.
What an imposter syndrome. Stephanie, don't worry about that. I've run businesses like most of my career now, and I'm still thinking to myself, actually, can I do this? Should I actually be here? Like, it's totally normal. Completely normal. Question on screen, actually, back over to you, Brittany, if I can, from Craig Silver. Thanks for everybody getting involved. Use the chat box to you.
Yeah,
he says, you and Aaron were quite a strong dream team, especially the Silverstone task. Were you surprised when Aaron exited quite suddenly? Because from our data coming from we were also quite surprised. he did have a bad week on the baby food task, but was you quite surprised? Because you were forming a very good partnership, as Craig said.
I absolutely loved working with Aaron, and he is an absolutely fantastic candidate. Mm. And I feel like we really achieved so much. And together, when we worked on task, we really did smash it. So you have to remember, we were expecting five people to go through into that interview stage. Yeah. We were shocked. Absolutely shocked, because I did honestly believe that Aaron would be there with us going into the interview stages. Mm-hmm. I loved working with him, and it was really, really tough. You know, every single candidate, when you have to see them go, that boardroom before we went into the interview where both Akeem and Aaron were fired, that was very, very difficult and very intense. Mm. Because they were trying very much to make us talk against everyone else's business to big up your own. And that's really tough, because you don't want to put down other people's businesses. Mm-hmm. And in particular, Akeem was so respectful in that boardroom. I don't know if it showed, but he said, "I am not going to sit here and put down anyone's business that I do not know. All I will do is speak about my business and why I think I should go through." And we really, really did keep it respectful, which is one thing I absolutely love about the candidates this year and the relationship we had.
Well, again, that's quite interesting. Coming over to you, Stephanie, if I can, because in series he's gone by, and we've had all of the, like, a lot of the previous winners of the show on In the Line of Hire, and a couple of brilliant finalists as well. I mean, Scarlett is absolutely fantastic. Obviously, we've had Ricky on. We've got Ricky on again to preview.
Oh, I love Ricky.
The thing is about Ricky as well, he's not only a business partner to Lord Sugar and also won the show, he's also been in an interview as well, gone through the whole business plan. So he's kind of got the whole thing. We've had Mark on, we've had Tom Pellerou and everyone else. And the camaraderie between the alumni, we're just talking in agreement, like off air about this, the alumni that you have with other candidates, even though you've never met them before, is quite remarkable. It's quite a strange feeling, because there's only a select few. How many is it? Series 16 that we're on, right? You're series 16, are you? So there's 16 series that have been on, and actually that's quite a small group of people to be able to say, "Oh, I've done that." That's quite strange. So you have an affinity, if I can say that, with everybody coming through the show. But on some of the other winners in the past, they have said, "Oh yeah, that I use tactics. I was tactical." Was there any tactics, did you think, Stephanie, from other candidates thinking, "Oh, I'm going to bring her back in the boardroom or bring him back in the boardroom because I know they're weak"?
No, honestly, I really do feel like this series, the most, we really did respect each other. And I mean, I can only speak for myself personally, because I know people can say it out loud, but I don't know what they're thinking in their head. I certainly didn't have any tactics. I would only ever bring people back in the boardroom that deserved to be in there, essentially. I was quite lucky, because the task that I'd lost, Silverstone, he brought us all back in. So I didn't actually have to decide on anyone to pick. I would have hated that, because
there was only four of you was there, wasn't there, on that task. So we just went,
Catherine on the task, and they're all like my best friends. Like, I'm so close to Nick and I'm so close to Catherine. So it would have been horrific to sit there. But also just carrying on what Brittany said, is we were very good this year at separating business and how we get on personally in the house. We understood that whatever happens on task, it's not personal if I say, "You know, Brittany, I think you could have done this better," because I'm not attacking her as a personal friend. I'm just saying, on that specific task, we could have done this a lot better. And I think we were very, very good at doing that. But it has actually been said a lot on social media, especially with the interview boardroom. A lot of people respected when they said, "You know, Catherine, do you think your business is better than Stephanie's?" And Harps was asked that question as well. Is that we all said, "I cannot speak for their businesses. I haven't read their business plans. I don't know where they want to go in 5 years. But what I can do is tell you why I think my business is the best." And I think that kind of age thing of like cat fights and people going against each other, it's a bit 2010. Like, no one really cares for that anymore.
I think what was interesting with when both of you got that, you know, unfortunately, the final bad news for the Lord Sugar, you both took it with such grace and politeness. Mm. And I think there's a real lesson there within business that sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but never burn your bridges. And I thought you just came across really well. You took it with grace, and then, you know, some other candidates didn't do that. So I think, you know,
you lose a lot more than you win.
One thing I see. Yeah, one thing I will from being in the process is Lord Sugar sees through tactics straight away. So if anyone did want to kind of tactically bring people into the boardroom, he'll call you out and he does identify that straight away. So I think it honestly is the best way to be. Just bring in whoever's responsible for the failure of the task and just play a fair game. And that's what we all did.
And own your mistakes, right? You know, absolutely. It is called The Apprentice. It's not called We Are Already Amazing Business People and Don't Need Your Investment Show, is it? It's called The Apprentice.
We're learning. I actually think I got out of some of the boardrooms by actually owning my mistakes. Like Baby Food Brand, I literally just put my hand up and said, it was a mess. It was awful. This was wrong. That was wrong. And I was part of that. And that's all I could do, because you can't sit there and pretend it's not your fault when it blatantly is. And I think it does take a little bit of emotional intelligence to understand where it's gone wrong and if you are responsible for that. And if he thinks that you can't see that it's your problem, then that's worrying to him as well.
And that's a really interesting point, Steph, which is it comes on to the big debate we've had throughout the series, which is the boys versus girls debate, and the fact that the girls have just been so much stronger in our opinion. And we talked about that role emotional intelligence perhaps has played in that. So would you think that's been a strength that you two have been able to show, the ability to understand emotion and keep your emotions in check?
Absolutely. I think it's funny because that conversation has happened so much, and where we've been doing press interviews as well. Why do you think you're that much stronger than the boys? And actually, if you notice the boys in the first few episodes, they're not working with each other. They're actually still trying to work individually. And I think the girls had a lot more emotional intelligence to realise that, yes, we can show our own individual skills, but if we kind of marry them together, we'll probably end up winning the task. And I think the boys, it took them longer to kind of gauge on to that. So I do just think the girls had a higher level of emotional intelligence in this series, perhaps, than the boys did. Don't get me wrong, they're not silly boys. But I think we were just slightly more switched on.
I completely agree. And I think that the girls identified early on everyone's strengths and weaknesses, and they put their ego aside, and whoever was PMing or sub-PMing played people to their strengths instead of kind of showing up for the sake of showing up when it wasn't their strongest skill set. And that really, really elevated us to wins. It really, truly did.
Yeah, I only put myself up twice to be PM. And Lord Sugar always used to emphasize in the boardroom, only put yourself up if it goes to your skill set. I could, you know, put my ego forward and put myself up for Baby Food Brand and stuff like that, but it wasn't applicable to my skills. So why would I do that? I think all he wants you to do is show you where you actually excel and not be an idiot and just try and be star of the show when actually it's not applicable to you.
I think that becomes harder though, doesn't it, Steph, Brittany, when the episodes go on. So they're like, because when you're PMing a task 10 and there's only three of you, that's actually arguably easier or more difficult, depending on which way you look at it. PMing the first task is an absolute nightmare. You don't even know who you are. You've only met each other for about five minutes.
That takes some bravery, PMing first task. I put my hands off to
Kathy. I was praying that first task didn't apply to me. So I was like, oh my God, I do not want to put myself up for it. So when it was like cruising, I was like, thank God.
Alex, so you know when you do the bridge walk, I identified three people that were going to be my main competitors just by looking at them. Mm. And Alex was one of them in my series. And he put himself forward for the project manager task on our first task. We actually sell fish in the fish market, right? And it was basically a selling task. So I was happy days. I was just going to go and roll up, come buy some fish. Or whatever.
Yeah, that was me at Cornwall.
it was basically that. But I didn't actually put myself forward until until task 7. Yeah. So, you know, I was like, nah, mate, it's not that I was running scared. Well, maybe I was, I don't know. But again, I don't think it was a tactic. I think it was, I knew that I contributed every single task. So even if we lost, and I only lost three tasks, but even if we lost, I knew I weren't going in the boardroom. Yeah. There was no justification whatsoever. And I think there's a handful of candidates now, maybe two or three. I know Karina, I think Sarah, myself, have never been in the final three of the boardroom. So I was never taken in.
Harpreet hasn't either. Harpreet's never been in the final three.
So Harpreet, loving it. And I know she's watching as well. Harpreet, you are absolutely...
Hi, Harps. We love you. Love you,
Harps. Amazing. So, look, I think
it's a really interesting
that dynamic.
Yeah, and I think that what you're talking about there is that, you know, the difference between formal and informal leadership. There is actually one of our data points that I was scoring against when I was doing the analysis, which is, you know, you can lead by putting yourself forward, 100%, be a project manager, but you can also lead by the way that you contribute to the task, the way that you listen, the effort that you put in. And so, you know, it doesn't, you don't have to always put your hand up to show what you've got it takes.
Absolutely. Well, I had a very similar journey to you, Lee. I didn't put myself up until task six, but the same as you is that I was always very, very strong within the team, always made sure I contributed. So I knew when we'd lost, you noticed that I didn't get brought back into the boardroom until I had to go back in the boardroom because there was only three or four of us. Well, one to six, even though I'd lost four out of six of those tasks, no one ever brought me back in because no one could have ever really questioned my contribution that I did the task.
No, for sure. I just want to get through some of the questions. We've got so many listener viewers, comments and questions. So Ben on screen, thanks very much, Ben. He says, how do you keep yourself motivated throughout the process with it being so fast paced, going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier? And also Capri's also says about the cameras as well, being camera shy. How do you get over that? So motivation and cameras being in your face. Like, Brittany, over to you.
So the first thing that keeps you motivated is just concentrating on winning. When you first go into the process, you're surrounded by 16 of the most amazing business people you've ever met. And you think, how on earth am I going to get rid of all these people? So just take it task by task and concentrate on winning. If you keep your eye on the prize, it actually makes the process much easier. If I had to deal with those sleeping conditions and lack of sleep in the real world, if I wasn't fighting for this prize, I would have been so much more exhausted than I actually was. But you've got to get up and you've just got to do it to win. And that really motivates you. Another thing is having the support of the others that you're around. You spend a lot of time driving and a lot of time waiting. And that can be like a really lull moment that can really affect your motivation and morale. But when you're surrounded by people that you have good relationships with and that pick you up, it actually makes it a lot easier. And also knowing that you have to go into the boardroom in a few days' time and defend everything that you've done keeps you alert and it keeps you motivated throughout because you don't want to get picked from Lord Sugar. So, yeah, it's actually easier than you'd think to stay on the ball and not let the exhaustion get to you.
I think a lot of it is just adrenaline. Like, you've got so much adrenaline in you. And for me, I have a funny kind of relationship with motivation because I don't necessarily think that people always remain motivated every day of their life. It more comes down to, you know, developing a routine and you go and do that routine whether you're motivated or not. I think if you rely on motivation alone, it can be quite a dangerous thing to play with. You know, one day, because one day you're going to wake up and you're going to not want to go to work. But if you've got that kind of routine instilled in you, you're going to go and do it anyway. But I think the easiest thing that was motivated is knowing that you're going to go and get 250 grand if you win. That's an easy motivation. Again, I'd run out of bed for 250. I'd run out for 100k, let alone 250. So I'm up for 50 quid. Yeah, give me a tenner.
I did 100 grand. Don't worry about that. It was a different format back in my old day. But I think people do forget. Look, there's always a balance with it being a TV show and also, you know, the opportunity. Like Lord Sugar said before your interviews, he said, you know, this is the. What it would have been the ninth business, I think, or 10th business that he actually invested in. That's 2.5 million quid that he's put into business. This is serious stuff. And now I can guarantee you it is his money. Like, it absolutely is Lord Sugar's money. You are genuinely business partners to Lord Sugar. This is not like a TV prize. And, you know, so people do forget that. And this is why I love, you know, Phoenix 51 and what we've done with the platform. The Apprentice is a giant assessment center. Every single week, you are put through your paces. Are you commercial? Have you got the leadership? Can you work together as a team? Can you go in and off the bat sell? Can you go in and negotiate? Can you actually build a relationship? Can you design something from scratch? This is an amazing, amazing opportunity for everybody that goes through that journey. It's still, in my opinion, you can see how fond of it I am. So to actually, you know, to measure that or to watch, to observe, to see actually, Brittany, you've been doing this, and Stephanie, you've been doing that, and Harps, you've been doing this, and Catherine, it's phenomenal to see and actually phenomenal also to see people grow as well. We're going to take a quick break, and it's the first time I've done this, so I hope this works. We're going to take a quick 30-second break. When we come back, we're going to have more from Stephanie and Brittany and Chris and all of your questions as well.
There's a powerful employee technology enabling organizations to make data-driven decisions at every stage of the employee journey, from hiring through benchmarking and development too. The platform provides detailed analytics on the most important asset in your business, your people, enabling organizations not only to make the correct hiring decisions, but also how to benchmark, train, and retain them. Phoenix 51, powering your people decisions through every part of the employee journey.
Okay, I think that worked really well. Happy day. So get a bit of the channel sponsor per plug in there for sure. One of our own, actually, Heather Saunders. She's our chief of staff, really, our operational wizard and guru in the background with Phoenix 51. She actually asked here, what has been your biggest takeaway from the show? So, Brittany, if I can, over to you first. What's your biggest learn from the show itself?
My biggest learn would definitely be the direction and changes to make to my business. So you're obviously with the best entrepreneurs in the country and the world, and they have given you feedback and advice that you can take away and implement to your business. That is gold. That is absolutely golden. So every bit of critique and advice that I've been given, I've definitely taken on board to improve my business. But on top of that, you have built relationships with 16 amazing entrepreneurs of the candidates. And all of them are willing to help you with your business. And that is just the most fantastic contacts. So as well as how much I've grown as a person, it's the support and guidance and direction that I've been given in my own business to escalate its launch and just create a fantastic business. So that's the best thing that I'll take away from the process.
Love it. Stephanie, well, same question to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a big question because, Lee, you'll know when you get to a certain, if you've been there for that amount of time, there's so many things that you learn. It's actually really hard to kind of narrow it down to one thing. Certainly kind of echo what Brittany says. To have the privilege of getting to the interview stage means that you get to meet four people on top of Karen, Tim and Lord Sugar, who have a lot of expertise in business. So I know you see the entertainment aspect of the interviews, but actually there was so much advice, especially Claude gave me some really good advice that I've now implemented. I love Claude, and I know everyone keeps laughing about that bit where he couldn't let me talk, but we actually did have a really nice interview, me and Claude, and he really did give me some sound advice that the first thing I did when I left, I was like, I need to do this to my business, like, I need to do it. So like Brittany said, it's the advice that you get from the interviews, but then also it really highlights where you excel in skills and where you don't. Like, for example, me, I'm selling and negotiations are my thing. That's my comfort zone. That's what I like. Branding, I never was really that keen on it, but it highlighted to me.
Brittany, just... get Brittany to do your branding.
Oh, 100%.
Queen of branding over here.
But it highlighted to me that I should definitely be outsourcing that. And I definitely shouldn't be doing it myself. So yeah, it really, it teaches you a lot about yourself, but a lot about your business skills as well. Like, it builds up your resilience. It makes you a bit, I'm way more fearless in business now. I'm not reckless, but fearless in business with decisions, because I know that I can be in rooms and things can be like hitting the fan and I've got myself out of there. I make decisions a lot quicker now because, like, you know, time is of the essence in there. So I now don't procrastinate on as many decisions. I go with my gut and go, well, if I'm not feeling it, I'm going to do it. If I'm not feeling right, then it's obviously not sitting well with me. So there's so many kind of skills it helps you sharpen on.
Absolutely. No, because you have literally been pushed to the end of your limits consistently for so long, nothing phases you anymore. I'm never going to get nervous again because I know that I have done the most intense interviews and intense process that you can ever do. So you're just this amazing confidence within your own ability that's just will never be worn down. I feel like I've got now, which is just invaluable.
When I went on the show, I was 20. I don't want to tell you my age now, actually, because you'll know what I am now.
I'm going to work it out with my calculator.
20-something. But I was actually quite late in building my own business. So I spent an amazing just under two and a half years with Amscreen. Started it from scratch. Fantastic business. Still going now. Simon, awesome. Brilliant stuff. But it was never my company, so I wanted to go and set my own business up. That was my dream. That's what I wanted to do. So I set up my business back, 10 years ago now. The confidence that the apprentice process gave me was absolutely critical in me setting that company up. I can guarantee you now, if I hadn't gone on the apprentice, I probably wouldn't have set my business up. That's how big it was in my life at the time. And I think that's important to get across to the viewers and to the listeners as well. Not only my experience, but that's what you're experiencing that right now. Like, you are in that bit that you're going, right, let's go. And it's amazing. There's, you know, to have that that ability to say, do you know what? I'm going to make that decision. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do that. And again, Brittany, I wanted to ask you, you know, you could arguably almost say you're taking even bigger risks because you're setting up maintain the game, which is something that you've got real good interest in and you're really knowledgeable about, but you haven't actually worked in that sector. So that's actually quite interesting as well.
Absolutely. So this was one of the kind of critiques that Lord Sugar gave me, suggesting why are you going into an industry where you don't have specific experience? But I have complete confidence in one, my own ability, and two, the fact that I have found a completely unique gap in a market. I'm not going to be going up against big competition. I'm going to be first to market. And I think if you've got passion and you can see that there's going to be market share for you, the rest will work itself out. You know, we'll be able to get there. And I think that I've been able to get a lot of advice from correct people. And, you know, for me to be the face of this company and the face of this brand, I know that I'm going to get the support to get to the place that I want it to be. And I have complete confidence in myself that I'm going to be able to do it. So no, I don't feel like it's a risk at all.
No, I agree with you. It's actually fantastic. Let's quickly go back to some questions. I know Chris will have some other questions as well, but we've got so many people asking questions. So Capri says on there, what was the most difficult task? And so I'll fire that one back over to both of you as well. And there's another one down here, which is, what are the favorite things to do during your down days?
Well, people are fascinated about what we do in the house.
I love talking about the down days.
People love to know what happened in the house when realistically nothing really happened on our down days. We slept, we ate, we laid around, and we chatted, and that was about it, really.
The house looked amazing, right? Sorry, Brittany, to cut you off. The house looks amazing. We had a warehouse conversion over in South London somewhere. It was amazing. Had a helipad and stuff, but we didn't have no swimming pool and this, that, and the other. Did you ever get in the pool? Did you ever go for a swim?
Oh, Brittany loved it. Brittany was in there. Actually,
I used to be a competitive swimmer, so I was swimming every day. And we had steam room, sauna, jacuzzi.
She was doing volleyball competitions in the pool.
Every day I was down there swimming. We had a gym as well. But a good bit of trivia was, because of COVID, we had to have the biggest ever house because you had to be able to social distance in every room. So they had to give us the biggest house ever on The Apprentice. Yeah,
there were benefits for COVID, dare I say.
A few benefits that we had.
We would have barbecues we would do group workout sessions, we would play Monopoly, we would play video games together. We just used to hang out so much.
Do you remember we did? So we actually, because you're not allowed to drink in the house for obvious reasons, you know, you need your brain to be switched on. And obviously 20 people drinking is just a recipe for disaster. But we actually set up a no drinking nightclub in the basement called NW1, because that was the postcode for it. And we just drank no Secco all night, which is like non-alcoholic.
We had to go on and you had to show your IDs before you went in, and they had like proper bouncers and everything.
We acted like it was a proper nightclub.
We danced for about 6 hours. Not one drop of alcohol. It was so fun.
That's all your Instagram posts. So we'll think that you're down the club, but you're not. You're down in
W1. We just said
W1. Oh, brilliant stuff. Fantastic. So let's come over to you, Stephanie, then. What's next for you? I mean, you've done amazing. I have to say, it's been brilliant seeing this side of both of you, because you are full of energy. You're clearly brilliant at what you do. You're going to go far. There's no doubt about it. Instagram is popping as we speak. Blue ticks are on their way, girls. Don't even worry about it. They're happening. What's on the agenda for you, Stephanie? What are you going to do?
Well, what's next for me is essentially go and do what I came here to do, which is get the investment. What people don't realise is that everyone says I had a company before, but my company had only actually been open for 3 weeks. Before The Apprentice. So actually it was fairly new, although I did have a lot of experience in business from my family. But I made all the changes that we discussed in the interviews, everything that was wrong in my business plan in their view, I then implemented it into my business. And can I just say, this process is the best pilot study that you will ever have for an idea, because it will tell you whether it's working or not, because whether people are gravitating to your website. You're getting such mass marketing with this. And since the interview episode, I'm not joking you, my sales went crazy. I sold a third of my stock in 3 days, which is wild for me in comparison. So I know that the market is there. I know the demand is there. So now it's time for me to level up, get that investment and take it to that next step, because I know it's a business that people want.
So you are looking for investment for your business itself. So if there is anyone out there that is interested, where can they get in touch with you, Stephanie?
So LinkedIn, I am on LinkedIn. I think, am I tagged on this one? Instagram, my email, info@littlefashionhouse.com. My website is www.littlefashionhouse.com. So if you're kind of interested in pre-loved market, sustainability, that sort of thing, and looking to invest in that sort of space, then I certainly think that we may be the investment for you.
But by the way, I think, you know, I think it's an excellent idea, genuinely.
Oh, thank
when you. I'm surprised, maybe I'm not surprised because maybe it was a BBC thing, but I'm surprised that Vinted never got mentioned against your business.
I think it just didn't make the cut. I know Depop got mentioned once, but I think I mentioned eBay in there. But
it was kind of eBay, wasn't it? But, you know, when you look at Vinted and what Vinted have done, and where they've come from and the amount of funding they've actually got and essentially what they're doing, it was a swap clothes business, wasn't it, to begin with, and then actually turned into, you know, that's the secondhand buying clothes and all that sort of stuff as well. I think it's a huge market for you to go after, and it's definitely something that is that when you're talking about children's clothes, and I've got three children, right, so I'm pretty qualified to tell you this, and they're all three girls as well, including identical twins that are 8 and my eldest is 10. When you're buying clothes for your children, you want to give them brilliant clothes, but they grow out of them in about 10 minutes. So you go and spend a load of money, and regardless of how much you earn, it's irrespective unless you're multi millionaires and you're not bothered. But going to spend, you know, 150 quid or £200 on, you know, some jeans and a jacket or whatever it might be, they're literally grown out of it within, 6 months. So you're basically going to do that again, or 3 months, shoe sizes. Yeah. I mean, your children's feet go from there to there.
Lee, the amount of stock that I get from people where it is in brand new condition, they've worn it once, they may have bought it for them for their birthday.
It's got tags on it.
Yeah, a lot of my stock does have tags on it because they buy it for a particular reason. They don't wear it for that reason, and then they can't fit into it. But I know there's a lot of investors that are interested in this because I know someone with a different business model, similar concept, has just been invested in on Dragon's Den with Stephen Bartlett and Peter Jones. So there's people that are interested in this. But funny enough, what you're saying about Depop and Vinted, so they're predominantly adults, and about 1-2% of their stock is children's wear. There is no marketplace that where their forefront of products is children. Children are always the afterthought on these websites. So I want to create basically the Depop or Vinted for children. That's my aim. But I know that does take a lot of investment. When Mike was saying I have no experience in fashion, technically it's a tech business. It's not actually fashion at all. What I want.
Yeah, it's a marketplace. Yeah.
Not that I've got any experience in tech either, but it's not a fashion business.
You're wrong. Lucky Mike didn't ask you that either. Look, the thing is, you know, I think the key thing is about that is that marketplace. If you can get that right and you get people coming, you know, build it, they will come.
What I would say on that, Stephanie, as well, is that, you know, Lee and I, we started a tech business 2 years ago, and we've never run a tech business before, but we did is we ensured we got the right people around us, you know, to bring in into the team to make sure that we're able to, you know, grow, scale, and essentially match and meet our goals. So I just think that, you know, a bit of advice is, make sure you get your team is absolutely spot on.
Four million valuation. Brittany, same with you. I mean, I've mentioned maintain the gain. I actually think, again, this is a very interesting idea. It probably don't look like it on camera, but I work out quite a lot. And I'm in the gym quite often. You have to now. We get to my age, it starts, you know, going south. So you have to try and do your best.
You look great.
Thank you very much. The your idea, what where are you now with your business, and what do you need? Are you still looking for that investment as well?
Yes, so I have injected some of my own money to bring Maintain the Gain to launch, and we are launching within 4 to 6 weeks. So I have now finalised the recipe with a third-party manufacturing drinks company, and all we're doing is finishing with the suppliers to get the recipe in, and then we're launching. So the recipe is going to be vodka, lime and soda, 105 calories and 12.5 grams of protein. We're going to be selling in 250 ml cans, and we want to distribute through bars, restaurants, hospitality outlets and festivals. So what I really want to get across in the marketing is, firstly, it's not a protein shake. It's light and juicy, so you cannot taste the protein. So really, you get all the benefits of the protein and you don't need to compromise on taste or consistency. So I think to be able to be out and, you know, enjoying a drink but also getting 12 grams of protein at the same time, it's like a dream come true. But what I need to get across in the marketing is, when you drink alcohol, it stops your muscle protein synthesis, so it negatively impacts your muscle growth. But if you have protein at the same time, it limits the negative impacts. So it's the best way for you to drink alcohol and protect your muscle from the alcohol.
And maintain the gain.
And live events, and you're always in a protein deficit. It's very difficult to get the right amount of protein. A lot of the food that you get is very carby and fatty. If you could just have a protein boost in the alcohol you're drinking, I think that there is huge demand for the product. So yeah, we're going to be launching very soon. If anyone's interested in purchasing, whether they're a business or the consumer, please visit my website or message me on LinkedIn or Instagram. But I am looking for an investment to launch additional flavors. So we want to bring out a tequila, rum and gin version of the range as well. And then we want to branch out into protein mixers, so non-alcoholic versions.
Yeah, love it. That's really, really cool. And clearly you've got, from what we've seen on screen to now, it's completely different almost. You know, the way that you've got it, it's there. You know what you're doing. I love it. It's really, really interesting to see, and lovely to see both of you grow throughout the process. Lovely to see both of you squirm in the process. We've all squirmed. We've all done it. And lovely, obviously, also to see you get as far as you did. Unfortunately, for both of you, you know, semi-final it was. Let's quickly talk before we go, because I know we'll run over time. But to be honest, I could probably spend another hour.
Let's do a double episode. Come on.
I know, double episode.
Only one more hour.
Carry on. As long as we've got questions. I mean, there's loads of questions coming in. We obviously know that that Harpreet has been watching, so hi Harpreet, and also Catherine. How good are these two? How good are they, these two? I mean, I know you formed a relationship with them, but again, did you earmark them week one, week two, thinking, hang on a minute, I've got to beat these two?
Straight away. Catherine, from when she won Cruise, I said that she was going to be my biggest competition. She's so switched on, and I don't think people realize the stats of like what she did from her bedroom to produce the business that she currently has. I think she did something like 80K net profit from her bedroom like last year in about 3 months, which is pretty decent for someone. Yeah. So she's got amazing business skills, amazing people skills. For me, it really depends on whether he's looking to invest in something physical or e-commerce, in which way he wants to go. And that's where it sits for me. Obviously, Catherine's is probably easier to scale because it's online. But then Barney's or Harps's business also has great USP as well. So it's really hard to kind of see which way he's going to go.
I think just a comment, Brittany, just a comment on screen there. This person says, my most favorite candidate I supported ever. I think they're talking about me. I don't know what gives me that impression. Says I love Brittany Carter. So loads of loving going on in the comments. What about, so we've heard about the Catherine side. What about the Harpreet side, Brittany?
So I pinned Catherine and Harpreet to be definitely to interview stages, basically from the beginning. To put yourself up for project manager on the first task and do it with such confidence and convictions and go in and own every decision. Catherine knew that if that task would have lost, there was no way that she could have pinned that on anyone else because she took such ownership. That takes so much guts and courage and business risk, and it paid off. So straight away, I was like, Catherine's one to watch. Harpreet, as you see on screen, she is so decisive and she has a skill to get everyone to want to do what she wants to do, but she does it in a really subtle way. But when you watch on the show, she'll have an idea and everyone else's will be different, but after 2 minutes they'll agree with Harpreet. It's like a magic skill.
There was a comment, actually, I think it was from Craig, I'll try and find it. He did say, has the edit been not very nice to Harpreet? Because Craig was saying that she's actually come across quite stone-faced a little bit. It's quite regimented, and I'm going to make this happen. Like, I think she has come across a bit like that, but not in a bad way for me. I just think she's been a leader, to be honest.
To say, What I was going to say is that we were having, and not to pit men against women or anything, we were having this conversation at an International Women's Day kind of conference that me and Brittany went to. And I'm not sure as much conversation would be about it if a man was being kind of that direct. I think people aren't used to kind of having a woman on the screen on the BBC being that direct and that vocal and going, I know what I want and I know what I'm going to do to get it. And I don't think there's anything wrong in that. Do I think the edit has lent to it a lot more? Yeah, perhaps, because the Harps that I know is actually a very soft individual, incredibly caring, and really does care about her team. You know you're going to win with Harps, and actually I really enjoyed working with Harps. I thought she was a fantastic leader.
We really enjoyed seeing Harpreet in her element when she was doing the food-based tasks. She's in the kitchen, all the ingredients, clicking her fingers, and, you know, just seeing that creative process, I think, was amazing. And I think that showed, you know, more of her personality and that softer side to her. And, you know, I think, you know, similar to yourself, Brittany, was maybe Harpreet throughout the process took a while to get into it, but then stepped up towards the latter half and I think really owned some of the tasks through project management, decisive leadership. And, you know, I think she's got a deserved place in the final.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
It's been fantastic. A couple more questions. So we've got one here from, I just put it up, from Benjamin Jones. It says, is it as dramatic, tense in the cafe after the task as it is made to look on telly?
Well, Britt wouldn't know that much because she hasn't been in the cafe that much.
She's never been in the cafe.
I remember when I asked you two what it's actually like.
When I first went in, I was like, do you have any soya milk? She was like, no.
I was like, Brittany, let me tell you what you have to do when you go in there because I'm a professional.
She was like, can I just want to stir the coffee?
Can I have a cup of coffee, please, and two eggs?
The thing is, I don't drink tea or coffee, so mine was just filled with water. I was literally just spooning water because I don't drink it. So that's a little bit
of feedback. It is quite tense.
It is. Don't get me wrong, but I think by then you're kind of, especially further on, you're kind of used to those tense moments. But it's only really discussing what went wrong. And I don't know what it is, but those things don't really faze me. Like, I always get questions where people go, are you not scared about the boardroom and things like that? At the end of the day, it's just a conversation. I always think to myself, what's the worst that's going to happen? I'm going to leave. That's not the end of the world. They do get quite heated. But I noticed that when it was just the women, it really was more just a discussion. No one raised their voice or anything like that. And I found more when we were with men, they were more ready to go and kind of fight about it. And I thought, what are you fighting me for? Like, we're only talking. Like, to me, it was just a discussion.
One thing to say is when there's an obvious reason for the failure of the task, someone's made a mistake, it's an easier conversation. But when you feel like everyone's done a really good job, but you simply lost out because the other team were better, that's when the cafe is really difficult because you have to start placing blame to people when actually everyone performed well. And that's the nature of the beast. That's when I find those situations difficult. Because
I find the final three boardroom much harder, especially when, like, for example, 8, 9, and 10 was pretty much being pinned on me from everyone. And it's a lot harder to fight your corner when no one's in your corner with you. So I found those boardrooms when they're like Silverstone branding, and I can't remember what TV shopping, that was really difficult for me because everyone was basically saying, Steph should leave, Steph should leave, Steph should leave. And so I had to really put my case forward to Lord Sugar as to why you should go against essentially the whole room and save me. Luckily, he did. But yeah, those were much more difficult conversations than the cafe, to be honest with you.
Well, there's a comment from Abby on screen. I have to read it out because it's absolutely superb. So both of you have inspired and empowered so many women. Aww. It's so refreshing to see such strong women represented on screen. Thank you for Abby for that. And
thank you, Abby.
As well, the fact that you were the top four and then a women top four as well. So absolutely superb. I have to say, just going back to the other point around intensity that Benjamin mentioned before, I found it the most tense is when you're trying to work out if you've won the task. Like, you kind of know if you've done well, but you don't absolutely know. I think that was the hardest part for us. And you're going in there as a team and you're thinking, well, I know we've made these hours. I know she bought that, and I know he bought that, and I know we've got.
Well, adding it up in your head, aren't you?
Adding it up in your head, and you're thinking, no, I've got enough revenue. I think it was task 10, we sold supercars. It was a brilliant task. And I think we did about 16 grand against something like 500 quid, or I might be being a bit facetious, it might be 2.5 grand or something. We battered at my project manager, of course, won the task, as you do. And I remember thinking, even though we knew that we'd sold some high value items, it was a Zonda, and we thought, oh, we've done really well here. You wasn't 100% certain. So even as you can go into the boardroom now and you're thinking, oh my word, what happens if somebody returns something? What happens if I don't want to buy? What happens if I've got my figures wrong? And that's the bit that's so tense, isn't it?
So we had it, Lee, with the TV shopping task. We knew that we'd sold four of the rings and they were the high ticket items. Yeah. We were like, I was smiling in the boardroom, like couldn't wipe the grin off my face. And then Lord Sugar said, you better wipe that grin off your face because three of the rings dropped out. And I was like, you're trying to do the math in your head, but my heart literally dropped. I felt like I was going to be sick. I was like, oh my God, we've lost.
That's so funny. That was me in Wales. If you rewatch the Wales episode, you can actually watch me in the boardroom with my eyes up to the ceiling going,
trying to work out.
Because I was trying to work out the other team's profit margin and then see if it equaled up to mine. So by the time we won, I'd actually already worked out that we'd won because I was like, that's why there isn't a lot of zoomed in shots of me because I'm adding it up in my head. But it is scary when you walk in, your project manager, and it's going to all fall on your shoulders, whether you lose, because it always does. It always does if you're project manager and you lose. Everyone's trying to get rid of you because you're the easy target.
Where did you go this year? You went to Wales. How many overnighters did you do? We went to Marrakesh, went to Morocco in my city.
You were lucky. You got to go abroad. So when we did the cruising, it went around the English Channel and couldn't go any further into another country because of COVID. So it literally just went around the Channel for 3 days. It was not allowed to step into France as all of us would have been done for. But yeah, so we went Cornwall, Wales. Silverstone was kind of a way, even though it was the same. And then, the cruise.
They were on.
What was your favourite task, Brittany? Wales. First, you.
No, go on, Britt. You're going to go first.
My favourite tasks in terms of enjoyment, Wales was me, Stephanie and Nick, and we laughed the whole time. It didn't come across on screen how good our tour was and how much fun they enjoyed it, but it was just so much fun. I was honestly in hysterics the whole time. And then I absolutely loved Silverstone and the TV shopping task because I felt like me and Aaron were just absolutely on point. That was my win as project manager and I just absolutely loved those tasks.
Shopping Channel, amazing. What about you, Stephanie?
You were so good in Shopping Channel, and I was so glad the edit really gave you that moment because she was fantastic in it. Wales, 100%. Like Britt said, they didn't really show in the edit how funny our tour really was. It was so good. And by the time we left Wales, my stomach was hurting from laughter because Nick
laughed
so much. And then my other one definitely was Cornwall. Being in those market stalls and selling, that's my element. I wish we did do more selling tasks, to be honest. Because of COVID, we couldn't. That's why we got more branding ones. I would have loved to have done that task where you have to get all the items overnight. I would have 100% put myself up for that all day long.
That was the Morocco task in my series when we went to Morocco.
I remember yours, Lee. That was the hardest treasure hunt they did.
Which one did you do?
They had to go to Morocco.
Oh, that was episode 1, wasn't it?
And it was a treasure hunt. Yeah, it was like find 10 items. It was mental. I remember, I think I've referenced it in the line of hire, so forgive me, viewers and listeners, but it was the funniest moment, right? So I think we had about 20 minutes left and we got 9 items and we were waiting for the last item and it was a juicer, right? And we're going, man, and I'm absolutely convinced there's hundreds of juices, right, everywhere, but I reckon production go around and hide them all somewhere. That's it. I mean, there's none about, and you're thinking whatever. So we're in this little Moroccan coffee shop thing. There's camera people everywhere, and all these locals are like coming around us, and it was like quite hullabaloo and all that sort of stuff. And you know what I'm like by now. I don't care. So I'm like, right, get away! Come on! We need a juicer. And I'm kind of just doing this kind of open market thing. And then this fella, I've got a juicer. I was like, seriously, have you got one? He's like, yeah, give me 5 minutes and. It's ticking down on the time and whatever. We turn around and a bloke on a motorbike, I swear, is just driving around like the FA Cup. He's held this juicer. It was unbelievable. I personally forgot there was cameras going on. I forgot I was on a TV show. It was just literally in that moment, the only thing that mattered was the juicer.
I'm so glad you got it.
We so got it, and we got back to the to the thing, and the next day we got the items and we won, and it was brilliant. And again, I think that gave me the confidence to say, actually, I should be here. Now, one of the things that I wanted to bring up actually with both of you as well, I don't know your educational backgrounds or anything like that at all, and that's one thing about Phoenix 51. It's about behaviours and competency and looking at what you can do, not your background or not. Kind of your education and that type of stuff. Not that I'm saying that's not important, but ultimately it's about you. Are you good enough to do what you need to do? And I had a massive complex about my education. You know, I didn't get very good GCSEs. I didn't go to university. I was on the back foot for back of that. And actually being around a lot of different people that had law degrees and, you know, like first and that sort of stuff, back then for me was a problem. Are you both comfortable with being around lots of different people, like being in that house, as you mentioned before, with all these different people, with all these different backgrounds? You're kind of looking around thinking, am I good enough? Should I be here? Did any of that sort of come across to either of you?
I don't think it was so much for the qualifications, because in terms of qualifications, I feel like pretty confident. I think if you're going to measure my IQ, I'm an intelligent sort of person. But for me, yeah, being intelligent on paper and being business intelligent are two different things. Personally, that's how I think. But I went in there with a business that essentially was like 3 weeks old. And you're standing next to someone like Amy, for example, who has a seven figure turnover, the same as Alex. They've been in business. Harps has been in business for 5 years. And I'm going, how am I going to beat them when I've literally opened a business all of 3 weeks ago? And so felt invalid to be there for business. I still felt like that even in the interviews. I was just like, why am I still? I felt like I was just kind of fluking the whole process and like I didn't deserve to be
that's
there.
That's imposter syndrome. I don't even know how I'm a CEO of three different businesses during my time.
Well, does that ever go? Do you always kind of feel a bit like that?
Yeah, I do personally. Chris, that's a good question for you as well. I still feel that. I mean, I still look around and I think to myself, holy shit, like we're running a business now for 4 million valuation. You know, we're going to push this SaaS business out to like, you know, to the nth degree of where we're going. And I still look around sometimes and think, do I actually know what I'm doing? Obviously, I do. I must do, right? But I do think, wow.
Yeah, I think you have that self-confidence through experience, but there's always going to be that level of self-doubt, and it's just checking that. And I think sometimes it's a positive thing, because it means that you know you want it, and you know that you really care, that you want to do well, you want to strive, you want to succeed. So I don't think it ever goes, but I think you become a bit more comfortable in your skin the more success you have.
Yeah.
Brittany, what about yourself?
It's really interesting, because when I kind of handed in my application, you know that so many people apply for the process. I actually didn't think I'd get on. I was like, I'm going to do this for experience, because in a year's time, when my business is a lot further developed, I'll apply again and then I'll have experience of the process. So when I actually got on the show, I was like, wow, I've got to write a business plan. I could really do with 3 or 4 months of, you know, talking to my manufacturers, talking to my suppliers. But I had to make a decision. Do I accept this opportunity, or do I wait a year to apply again, and then maybe things might be completely different? So I really had to make a decision to be like, do I go into this process with a very premature business, or do I wait a year? And I took the risk to go into the show, you know, with a business that was younger. But it all worked out so well, because one of the people that I was with, the track record that I had of winning tasks, you know, how far I got in the process, even though I didn't win, it could have been a year on and I could have been the first one out. You never know. So I'm really glad that I still went with that. It did also mean that when I got into the actual process, I was surrounded by people that had a lot more successful businesses. So at the beginning, initially, I did again have some imposter syndrome. But after a few weeks, when I got into my stride in the process and I kept winning tasks, I got really confident and a bit cocky, and I was like, yeah, I deserve to be here. So it definitely went away as we got through the tasks.
Well,
brilliant.
I
just want to jump in, mate. So I think it's really interesting. We've had some comments about you both being, you know, an inspiration. You know, you've clearly got all this passion and energy, which has really come across today. And you know, you got put through a very tough, grilling process. But you both said that you've come away from that having learnt something. So a question to both of you, if you've got some people that are watching this or have seen you on the show and they're thinking about starting their own business, what one piece of advice would you give them?
Mine would definitely be to just start and to take the risk. That would honestly be mine, because we so easily could have said, no, I'm not going to apply to The Apprentice, and then my life wouldn't have changed the way that it had. This process has taught me, take every single risk, take every single opportunity and back yourself. You're only ever going to end up in the same position you were initially. So just start, go for it, take the risk, and it'll be the best thing that you ever do.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Brittany, is that I would rather sit there in 20 years time and go, do you know what? I know that business didn't work. I know in my head it didn't work. I tried everything, than sit there and go, what if I had the guts to do it? How differently would my life have gone? I think a lot of people stop themselves from doing something because of ego, because they fear if they fail that it's going to be embarrassing to people. But I would say stop caring what everyone else thinks, because your life isn't going to be benefited by them. Just go and do what you want to do. Like, if you have an idea in your head or a seed in your head, go and try it. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. Go and try the other thing. A lot of there's a lot of statistics that a lot of people have 7 businesses before they get onto their actual successful one. So there's nothing wrong in trying something out and it not working out. What is wrong is that if you stop trying, in my view. So I would always say, don't look back in regrets with that.
And if you look at all of us, if you look at Catherine and Harpreet, they all started their business. They had to take a risk and it was just an idea. And look where they are now. I had a lot of people say, oh, you're so brave for leaving your job. And even on The Apprentice, Lord Sugar said I should go back to my job. But, you know, I'm always going to be able to be back in that position. So you just have to try to have the life that you want and you've got to take those risks.
Yeah, some absolutely inspirational words there, honestly. It resonates so much. Like, sometimes, like, we've had our ups and downs ourselves as a business, and Lee always says to me, you know, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it, right? So
that would be it's a perfect segue, actually. That would be what I would say. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it. And also, you're the average of the 5 people around you. So surround yourself with amazing people, and then you imagine the average of them amazing people makes you amazing, right? Yeah. So don't surround yourself with people that are below average and you know, and mediocre. Surround yourself with people that are massively high and be the worst in the room. Sometimes I walk into our board meeting and I think, wow, I'm literally the worst person in this room. Like, I'm the CEO, but don't matter, because it means that I've got some fantastic people around me, and that is what it's all about. Look, we could talk forever. Maybe we will in the green room afterwards, but unfortunately for the viewers and the listeners, you're not going to get hear that conversation. It's been absolute pleasure having Stephanie and Brittany on in the line of hire today. That's it. Wow, it's been an absolute it's been amazing last 11 weeks. We're 14 down and now to the final. Will it be Catherine? Will it be Harpreet? Who knows? I think everybody in the final 4 actually was worthy, but it is down to the final 2. Next week's show, we have the epic Ricky Martin. Yes, Ricky Martin is back with us, a man who knows very well how to win, how to be Lord Sugar's business partner, and also how to tackle all of them interviews that you've seen these two lovely people do just only a few days ago. We'll be back on Thursday, the 24th of March at 10:30 p.m. That's straight after the Your Hired show. So please subscribe via our sponsor, Phoenix 51 YouTube channel. And you can listen on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, all via Audio Boom. Don't forget to subscribe and to like and to share. And all that's left to say is, Stephanie, Brittany, you've been absolutely superb. And thank you so much for sharing everything that you have today.
Thank you for having us. I enjoyed it so much.
Amazing stuff.
Thank you.
Cheers.